Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time again. Tuned in to Walker the Walker. Got a good one for y'all today, so y'all go ahead and y'all strap in. Keep in mind, like we do in every beginning of every episode, we do not own the copyrights of none of the music that we're vibing. However, we like the vibes. This one right here is, like I said in the last show, we're big fans of Boney James.
Boney James.
So this one here is called Slow Burn from his album Slow Burn that came out in 2024. Shout out to Boney. Let's get into it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, y'all tuned in. Walker the Walker. I'm your man, Lou Walker, as always. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Sitting across from me is the OG himself, Mr. OG Joe. Mr. OG Joe.
Hey, hey. Happy New Year's to everybody. Oh, yeah. 12 days in, and it's still a new year.
Yes, sir.
Hope everybody arrived with good health and sanity. Those that didn't, you have our prayers to come up. So,
and I just hope that this year that we actually achieve all of the things that we say we're going to do. Everybody usually comes up with New Year's resolutions and things they want to start anew with and things of that nature. I hope that you guys stay on pace, stay on track, and don't deviate from the plan.
All those stats shows that 95% of yous New Year's resolutions don't last more than 10 days, but nevertheless.
Which means that if today's date marks that survey, a lot of y'all have already lost.
No, but, you know, a real note, though. If you make those New Year's resolutions like many of us do every year, mm-hmm. Keep the goals achievable, you know, don't put in a burn factor.
You know what I mean?
You know, start out slow and don't give yourself a goal that you have to persevere. You have to do it every day. Those are burnout factors, you know, so just set your goals at a moderate pace.
And realistically.
Yeah, realistically. Even though the realistic ones, you know, has burnout factors, you know, just, you know, if you have to start out 1 or 2 days a week or 1 or 2 days a month, mm-hmm. you know, work up to it. Don't burn out from it.
Right, right.
You know,
so. I agree to that wholeheartedly. And ladies and gentlemen, you know, I never talk about this on any of the shows, but last year's New Year's resolution for me, it was very reasonable, it was very achievable, but it wasn't anything kind of high as far as in what I had to put my efforts into. But I said I was going to read one Bible verse every day, all year, and I achieved that. So now we're going to go this year, 2 verses. I get through that whole book.
Yeah, yeah.
you know what I mean?
Well, that's the way you do it. In that way, you know, you're working your way up to your goals.
Right.
See, when you set your goal high, then that puts a lot of strain on you to maintain it.
And the ability to do it.
Yeah, you know, and we know they're things that'll come up in between.
Always.
You know, and make you have to deviate from your plans.
Yes.
So set it at a slow pace and I'm sure you'll be able to achieve it by the end of the year or whatever your time span for that particular goal is, you know.
Go ahead. No. But I will say this. If, you know, you have a New Year's resolution in the courts do not agree with it, you can always, like they said in Article 4, you can pick it up and take it to another state.
You can
get that New Year's resolution. Right, and appeal your New Year's resolution. What's on tap for today, OG?
Look, we're going to talk about something that, you know, and I always wonder, and I think a lot of the earlier years of schooling, mm-hmm. you know, some classes, I mean, some schools did offer political government, and they were probably taught, you know, some of the basic things about our Constitution, you know, and I think it was probably limited to the first and second freedom of speech.
Yeah.
You know.
Right to bear arms.
Yeah, you know, and I think those were probably the two main topics that, and even at that, you know, when you're so young at, you know, age 16, 15, 16, you know, you didn't see a need to understand the Constitution.
Right.
You know, thereby you didn't focus on it. But as you become more of an adult and identify with your country, I guess, you know,
then you're more in tune.
You would think.
Yeah.
You would think, you know, you would want to know more about it. So, you know, that sets me on this journey. So we're here today on Article 6.
Okay.
And Article 6 is actually considered the Supremacy Clause.
Okay.
And it's a very short article, only three clauses in it.
Okay.
And clause one deals with the debt.
Okay.
And it states that all debt connected and engagements entered into prior to this Constitution shall be valid under the Constitution.
Absolutely. Okay.
But then there was, and I think that's why they actually got away from the Confederacy laws, you know, because they were really construced.
Okay.
You know.
What would you say is the confusion when it came to the Confederate laws versus the United States Constitution?
They were hard to understand.
Okay.
I think what the Constitution did is they just broke it down into plain
made in Z.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so, and we'll look at a slight reading of the Confederacy paper and just to illustrate how difficult it is to follow it and to understand its entirety.
Right. Okay.
Some of the basic points that are made in this short three-clause text includes: judges and federal officials are required to abide by the law that is written in the Constitution. Mm. How ironic, you know, that would be one of the purposes of our Article 6.
Yeah.
Judges and federal officials are required to abide by the law written in this Constitution. And we just witnessed judges and officials not abiding by.
Yeah.
You know.
We had a nice little look at that.
Yeah, you know, so how appropriate this is for this time. We're talking, you know, 1700s.
Yeah.
And today it's still prevalent to say.
Yes.
How come? Who had the hindsight, who had the overview that we would be almost 300 years later, you know?
Still going through and still living under the same structure.
Yeah, you know, and these people are still not getting it. That's the point that I want to emphasize here.
You know,
they're not operating under the laws as they're written. In other words, they're interpreting it to mean what they want it to mean.
Right.
And that's why the Confederacy papers were so construced, man, and hard to understand is the reason why they rewrote it as the Constitution.
Okay.
So, and it states that all debts and engagements,
yes,
regardless of when they were entered into, even prior to the Constitution being written, have to be paid off by the states that owe them. Mm. In other words, this doesn't give the state a way to rescind a debt. You know, they were still going to be obligated to pay the debt that they owe.
Right.
You know. And so all laws and treaties, and we're gonna talk about a few of those issues, mm-hmm. as the supremacy clause refers to today.
Right.
All laws and treaties in the Constitution are governing laws of the United States. All laws and treaties in the Constitution are the governing laws of the United States. Okay. And when we think about that, though, we don't see where, you know, our officials respect that. When you think about it, all the laws. Now, we just installed a new president.
Right.
And we just learned that, you know, if you have a conviction, a felony conviction, you're not supposed to be able to vote. If you got a felony conviction. But nevertheless, we can install a president.
Yeah.
You know, with 34 of them. You know? So what part of this law that they don't understand?
Honestly, now let me ask you this question, OG. Now, we already based on this, you're talking about debts, you're talking about, you know, requirements for presidency.
Well, I just brought that in because when you think about the supremacies of the law,
right?
So your state law and your federal law,
right?
You know, you cannot vote if you have a felon,
right?
If you're a felon, you can't vote.
If I'm not mistaken,
you got to get it expunged.
But not even that. But if I'm not mistaken, they also say that you can't run. If you're a felon as well. Because you said earlier in the beginning of the show, we spoke on early schooling. You know, when we went to school, you know, I'm talking, you know, 9th, 10th grade. You know, we took world history or American history. They told us, you know, in those classrooms that if you're a felon, you can't run for president.
Yeah, well.
So
essentially what we're talking about today, isn't it?
Right. So it really kind of makes my head scratch when you sit there and you wonder to yourself, okay, if I myself cannot run for president because I am a felon, how did he slip through the cracks? And I'm not downplaying him. Way to go. Able to do that.
But it says,
yeah, talk to me.
Judges and federal officials are required to abide by the law.
Exactly.
That is written in the Constitution.
Exactly.
So the judges and the officials slipped him through the crack.
Exactly.
They did not abide by the law of the Constitution. Simply stated.
And I'll honestly say I'm disappointed in the Democratic side, too, just on the strength of that was not an emphasis that they wanted to battle with. Like, I honestly feel like that was something that both Democrat and Republican was 100% cool with this man being a felon and still running. I think this is my conspiracy theory. It's not, you know, what I've heard or what I've read, but I feel like the reason why it's like that is because half of the senators, half of the congressmen all have some sort of felony under their belt, which means that all of them need to get the hell up out of that office, in my opinion.
Yeah, I know you don't mean it literally when you say half.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no number.
We know that there are many of them that has some kind of conviction.
Yeah.
You know.
Shame on y'all, by the way.
Yeah, well, to say the least, you know. Because if you're not going to abide by the law, you can't lead the greatest office in the land.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the example that we follow is the ones that are set in Washington.
Right.
You know, so if you're going to allow this kind of behavior, mm-hmm. even at a state level,
mm-hmm.
you know, you got state representatives that have been violating the laws, mm-hmm. you know, and I think they did one thing great in the state of Florida by getting rid of Matt Gaetz, who had this pending litigation of child pornography or drug use.
Man, that's Hollywood.
And I call it pimping. They call it sexual
trafficking, you know. Sex trafficking.
Yeah, I call it pimping, man.
That's you all know? It is. That's you all know? It is.
They just using a political term to make it sound not so unappealing, I guess.
How they say, OG? Politically correct?
Yeah, making it sound politically correct.
You're trafficking. You pimping these girls. You know, is what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, and you're soliciting prostitution, man.
All day long.
You know.
But then
to say the very least.
But that's
they're minors.
Absolutely. But then that goes the same thing for OnlyFans. The young ladies that sign up for OnlyFans and sit up there and parade their bodies on the internet and stuff like that. That's getting pimped out too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, to say the very least, you know. So, you know, back to, you know, to the topic here at hand, which that is part of the topic, you know, because they're not abiding by the laws.
Absolutely.
And it goes on to say that all officials, senators, representatives, House members, judges, must take an oath to abide by the Constitution and governing laws in it,
mm-hmm.
and no religious test will ever be a requirement for someone to qualify as a representative. In other words, a religious test, you can't, you know, say, well, do you believe in God or do you believe in Muhammad,
mm-hmm.
or do you believe in
Buddha?
Buddha, you know, any of the other deities, if you will, cannot come into play.
You can't question that. Religious test, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't have a religious test, you know.
Taking it back to what you said about oath. Now, I've read in the Constitution, it says that the oath states that they will support the Constitution against all enemies, both foreign and domestic.
Right.
So why is it that we leave, or I ain't going to say leave, that's incorrect politically. Why do we omit domestics when it comes to that oath? Why do you think that we omit domestics when it comes to that oath?
Why? Well, I think because at that point when it's omitted,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think now because of what happened January 6th,
yeah.
what they call in J6,
they need to kill that.
Yeah, they call it January 6th rather than to call it what it was.
Right.
You know, because of that, you know, they omit that because we were witnessing what I would consider domestic terrorism.
I agree.
You know, domestic terrorism. And it was mutiny against the government.
Absolutely.
You know.
But then you got a guy, you know, running people over in Louisiana, and you're just going to call that flat out terrorism. You're just going to call it terror.
Yeah, you done mowed down, you know, 15-20 people in, you know, that was terrorism.
With the plot to bomb the city. So that's terrorism. But these guys that live here, that pay taxes like we pay taxes, and they stormed the Capitol, dismantled the whole area. But that's not an act of terrorism.
Well, and they carried homemade weapons. They did find a couple of pipe bombs laying around.
Mm.
They, you know, beat up police officers. You know, and that's not domestic terrorism. Okay.
All right. And before y'all say anything out there, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go ahead and let y'all know that the definition of terrorism is the use of violence or threats against non-combatants to achieve political, social, or ideological goals. That is the true definition of terrorism.
In case you didn't know.
Now, y'all tell me that definition did not speak on January 6th. I'm going to let y'all post that in the comments. Continue on, OG.
So, with that definition, it's clearly obvious that's what took place. But having said that amount,
mm-hmm.
there's plans to let these guys go.
Talking about giving them a full pardon.
A full pardon.
For doing all of that nonsense. Now, granted, I will say this. As a father, I agree with him. But then as a citizen, I don't. Okay, Joe Biden, his last little hoorah up out of that door before he decided to give Ukraine some billions of dollars for whatever reason, which I'm still mad about. You gave your son, Hunter, a full pardon. Okay. As a dad, I probably would have done the same. But he had coke in the White House.
Did he?
Allegedly. Allegedly, coke in the house.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you think of that substance, you know, I mean, it's being consumed by more people than you know.
I was just going to say, like, half of Congress got coke in their back pocket.
I won't make that statement, but, you know, coke has long been considered a recreational drug.
It has
the kind of effect that allows you to go to work and function in a high capacity,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, you know, I don't think he was the only one, if that was his, which I, you know.
He was probably partying with somebody. No, I don't know too many people that do coke by themselves. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, it's a social thing.
Exactly.
You know?
Like now, granted, I'm not saying that people don't do it on their own. I'm pretty sure right before you go into work, you slab one up your nose so that you can
get your line.
You know, just so you have the best. So you're on your best attitude at work.
It creates a state of euphoria, man. I mean, you're like on the top of your game, man. When you're doing that stuff, you know. And those guys was always tip top. You know, but at any rate, you know. So,
ladies and gentlemen, you know you're doing too much if you sniff every other word. That right there, yeah, like, you're doing sniff. Way too much if that's the case.
You know, look, doing the nose gesture.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, calm it down, guys.
We know what you're doing. It's okay.
A bump a day keeps you happy anyway. Like, calm down. Anyway.
But now,
I don't do coke, by the way. Nobody in here does.
The treaty during the American Revolution.
Okay.
We're talking 1783. That was a treaty of Paris.
Okay, okay.
Okay, it was signed.
That's the French War, the First World War? Was that around?
American Revolution.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. I'm on board now. Let's go.
In 1783.
All right.
They signed a treaty, the United States,
mm-hmm.
and officially ended the war.
Right.
Recognizing the United States. See, that's what we were fighting against Great Britain. We was trying to get our independence. So that's what that was all about. The United States... recognizing the United States as an independent nation from Great Britain, because, you know, we was under their rule for a long time, you know. And it was signed by representatives of the United States,
mm-hmm.
including Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, Ben Frank.
Yeah, right. John Jay and John Adams.
Right.
Okay, these guys also signed that treaty.
Right.
But during that American Revolution, this sounds like a history class, guys, and it really is in a manner of speaking.
I mean, but the saying goes.
But what we're dealing with here in this history conversation is the fact that Article 6 has this supremacy. It's a supremacy clause, you know. It takes precedent over your state laws.
Right.
Your local laws. And that's essentially, this is all what this is about. So what we see here is during the American Revolution, America was fighting against Great Britain.
Right.
The Revolution was a war for independence, mm-hmm. fought by American colonies. So we were still like only 13 states, if you will, at that time. Yeah, right. Against the British government, aiming to break free from British rule. See, we were tired of the Brits. Mm. We wanted to You know, we wanted to go out here and
do our own thing.
Yeah, do our own thing and spend our own money.
Right.
You know, the key points about that American Revolution, though, the combatants, the American colonies, later the United States versus Britain. In this time period, like I said, it was between 1775 and 1783.
Right.
The key events, the Battle of Saratoga.
That's about an hour from here.
Considered a turning point where the American achieved a major victory against Britain. And we're talking between 1775 and 1783. The United States had debt before the Constitution was written. And this is where we really see this supremacy clause take effect, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The United States had debt before the Constitution was written, as the country had been borrowing money. Look, we're talking 1700s, almost 1800. They was borrowing money to pay for the American Revolution War.
Okay.
They was borrowing money then.
So we've been taking out loans. We've been taking out loans since the 1700s.
Yeah, man.
So what loan did we take out for this man Biden to give these jokers in Ukraine $40 billion?
You know how they do it today. And we had a topic, a conversation where we were talking about debt isn't always bad.
Right, yeah.
Okay. So the way they do it today, you know, I'll take a bundle of my debt and sell it off.
Okay.
You know, so that whoever I sell it to collects the interest plus the principal.
Right. Mm-hmm. Much like how your home mortgages go.
Much like that. You know, yeah, so
like when you buy a house, they can sell your mortgage to another bank, and that bank will buy it to put the money back into that bank, the previous bank's pockets, and then we just pay them the interest and stuff.
Principal and interest,
exactly.
So that's what a lot of banks do with their mortgages. They'll take, and they have methods that they use to decide.
Absolutely.
Which of these mortgages goes into this bundle of mortgages, you know? Mm-hmm. And they might, you know, have people that are slow payers, you know, that have some default, smaller mortgages, you know, they'll take $50 million worth of that stuff, we'll say, bundle it up and sell it to First Bank of America, we'll call it, just making up a name, you know. And so the bank collects the 50 mil, clear their portfolio of those mortgages, elevate their banking standards and principles and equity, if you will. And then the bank over here, the board, it gets to collect the interest on the $50 million worth of mortgages. So essentially, this is what happened with America when they was borrowing money to pay for the American Revolution. However, the war, the United States, during the war, the United States owed $75 million in debt for the war.
God, that sounds so low right now.
Oh, God. Wouldn't they like to have that debt today, you know?
I'm telling you, man.
They're almost $75
trillion. You had a T in that thing. That's
primarily borrowed from the French government.
Okay.
And domestic investors.
Mm.
So it wasn't like they was borrowing from China, you know, as they do sometimes today, you know, not borrow from them, but they finance a lot of our debt.
Right.
You know, that trillion, they're paying $1 trillion in interest on the $39 trillion debt. The interest is $1 trillion payment a year. You know, The states owed.
We don't even have a single citizen making that kind of money right now.
The states owed an additional $25 million.
Okay. You said the states?
Yeah.
Is that a piece or is that?
The colonies.
Okay.
That they were called.
Oh,
they,
got you. You know, 13 they had, states.
Yeah, they had a $25 million additional monies owed.
On top of the government. Okay.
That was state debt. Paper money. Paper money issued under the Continental Congresses and Articles of the Confederation was worthless.
Oh, man. So the dollar didn't even... dollar wouldn't really
well, the Confederacy money, you know, it was essential in the IOU, you know. Mm. It had no real value whatsoever.
Well, I mean, damn, OG, when you're sitting up there and you're $23 million in debt and $75 million, about $100 million in debt before the war started, I mean,
yeah, well,
your dollar don't mean crap.
Your dollar was worthless.
Yeah, you know, that makes sense.
Well, you had no income.
Or equity.
You had no income to build equity. I mean, you know, you have no monuments. You didn't have no landmarks. You had nothing but ruins from the war.
No, people didn't even believe them 13 states even existed back then, probably.
Foreign credit was unavailable.
Right.
You know, you couldn't borrow from nobody.
Now,
you know?
Foreign credit. Now, is that something that we're using in modern day time?
Well, foreign credit. Well, it's not like... Well, see, when you go to the money market.
Okay.
Okay, you go to the money market and you take your dollar. See, everybody tried to brace their currency
right.
against the strong dollar.
Right.
But when you go foreign with it, they have to convert... Their currency
to ours.
To the U.S. dollar.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times, it depending on the money, on the market at the time, they'll take a loss just to have the power of the dollar, the American dollar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and vice versa. So, but America try not to buy into these markets where the American dollar lose value.
Mm.
You know, but when foreign countries want our goods, they have to convert to our monetary dollar, to our currency, you know, to acquire them. So, you know, it seems like you're using foreign credit.
Right.
When
right.
in fact, it wasn't available at that time. So, the United States government struggled to pay off this debt, though.
Yeah, they did.
And in 1785... they stopped making interest payments to France.
Can you imagine? We ran off on the plug.
We stopped making interest payments to France.
Goodness gracious.
The U.S. defaulted on that $100 million.
You said 1785, we defaulted against France.
We stopped making payments to France. The United States defaulted on further installments in 1787. You know, they just say, heck with it, man. You know, we done...
What, they gonna repo it?
You know, we've gotten our independence.
Yeah.
So, heck with them. We ain't giving them another nickel.
And they gave us the Statue of Liberty.
In 17, to get this now, in 1790.
Mm.
Okay? 1790. Alexander Hamilton... the first Secretary of the Treasury, okay, helped the United States solve the debt problem. Wow.
A. Hamilton.
Alexander Hamilton helped solve the debt. Where is he today?
First of all.
I guess that's going to be our Elon Musk. Going to be the Hamilton, him and Ramaswamy. You know, I guess they're gonna try to sit in but look what Hamilton and them did. They found the first bank of the United States to pay off the war debts.
Mm.
They found it. They found it. That means they opened up the first bank of the United States.
Absolutely.
To pay off the debt.
Now, do you really think that Elon Musk, the richest man in America right now, is going to really try to find a way to eliminate death? Like,
well, you know, to answer your question, when you have we got almost 340 million people in America today.
Just about, yeah.
You have debt of 36, 38, 39 trillion dollars and ticking more and more daily.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a source of revenue, in other words, what do you have to generate income besides your people?
I don't see them having anything other than the space shuttles.
Well, that's private.
I know that's private, but that's the only thing that we have that we can generate income off.
Well, the government can't generate income off of a private, unless we're talking about some taxes from it, you know.
But at the end of the day, we've had this conversation about our debt a long ago, and I said the one thing that I know for a fact that nobody would do, and I said, well, how many billionaires do we have on the Forbes list? There has to be at least 30 billionaires. There's over 100 millionaires on that Forbes list. If you have those 30 guys give up $1 billion, because they're all worth more than that. So you get, have them, not even a billion, have them give up $500 million apiece. And then have the millionaires give up $100 million apiece. We're out of the debt like that.
Well, see, that sounds good.
Again, but guess what? I know they're not doing it, but guess what? Sound good.
But guess what? That was one of Biden's signature campaign promises.
Yeah, I know it.
Make the billionaires and millionaires pay their fair share of taxes. They all sided against it.
Of course they did, because they don't want to give up that money.
No, so now what? He's going into the Oval Office, and he's going to reduce taxes to cut spending. But guess what? He's going to create more inflation.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to paralyze a lot of people that are on Social Security, because they're talking about cutting $450 million off of Medicare.
Yeah. And the
SSI. Like these people on Medicare got these dollars just sitting in their pocket that, okay, you take $100 a month from me, I'll be okay. No, man, these people are living from paycheck to paycheck on some of these Medicare
That will forever be my argument with this country, and why I agree with a lot of people about leaving this country is because you guys up there that's got those hundreds of millions, those billions of dollars, y'all don't want to give y'all money up. And I understand, y'all worked y'all asses off. Y'all don't want to give that money up. I wouldn't want to give that money up either.
Did they work? See, I question that.
Oh.
Did they work their butts off for it? Because listen, they worked the American people's butts off.
I get what you're saying now.
You see?
Uh-huh.
That money came to them easy. It's easy to phantom an idea.
Yeah.
You know, but I count on the public to support it.
Yeah.
See, all these billionaires, all these millionaires, the only millionaires that I think work are your athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Them boys earn their money.
Yeah.
They may be overpaid.
Yeah, way overpaid.
You know, but you get out
Trevor there, Lawrence, man, you're overpaid.
When you get out there, man, and you take this brutal beat down Sunday after Sunday after Sunday after Sunday,
one bye week.
Yeah, you earn that paycheck.
I give you that. You know, I will give you that.
You're a hockey player, soccer player. You get out there and you run up and down that field for 90 hours. Minutes.
Mm-hmm. You know, hour and some change.
And a basketball player, you get out there for your half hour.
Nah, it's 48 minutes.
Well, I give 15-minute quarters, you know.
12 minutes.
They gone to 12 minutes? They're 15 12, minutes, aren't
12-minute quarters. 15 for football, 12 minutes for basketball.
They only playing 12 minutes. They don't earn that money.
I'm telling you. Look. I agree with you. You got people. You got people like Ben Simmons,
man, who's guaranteed 12 minutes every day.
Pop, you got OG.
Four times a day. You know? Come on, man.
OG, you got people like Ben Simmons that sit there and got a $65 million guarantee whether or not he plays. $65 million going in that man's pocket whether or not he plays. And he's choosing.
12 minutes.
And he's choosing not to play those 12 minutes.
They played 12 minutes when I was in high school.
You know? It's tough. It's a tough pill. That's why I said that. That's why I'm like, okay, I'm starting to kind of switch my statement from they work their butts off to we working our butts off.
Yeah.
But in the same breath, I'm like, okay, I hate the idea that y'all are sitting up there in your little fancy little cars and your high value Teslas all custom fitted and all of that jazz. I hate the idea that y'all sit up there and say, the country needs to do better. And you guys aren't on the forefront of helping this country do better.
Right, right. You know what I'm saying? Part.
Let's talk about the reality of the fact that you have us down here, us common folk, out here spending money on all of this high-end fashion, all of this money on Louis, Gucci, this, that, and the third. And y'all sit up there in y'all little fancy chairs and get all of the stuff that we're paying hundreds of dollars for. Y'all get it for free. And they got the nerve to tell us to go buy it. No, it don't work like that. I don't respect that personally.
And the hardcore part about this is much of these products are manufactured in another country.
No, and another thing that I found out.
Manufactured in another country, and the workers in America has no participation in it.
Seriously.
But we got to go out and buy this stuff.
And to feed to your point as well, you got some of those celebrities who actually do go out there and buy their stuff. They're not buying it here. They're taking trips to Milan and all that, and the Rome and all that. And they're buying all of that for a fraction because what you just said about the U.S. dollar, they're buying it for the fraction of the price that we're paying because y'all got a private jet that can shoot over there real quick. Just go ahead and buy five purses and six dresses for $1,000, but then we can only get one of those.
And then you say, oh, my wife got married in her dress. It costs $20 million.
Here?
Look, that was made in Italy or made in the Philippines for like
a third,
if you that much.
In other words, people, we know. Y'all can stop playing that facade for us.
Now, so something else Hamilton done.
What did he do? Talk to me.
He issued federal bonds to cover the debt.
Oh, he's the starter of the bonds?
Wasn't that cool?
I thought that was a real strategic, methodical move.
Man, you know. And so what do you do with the bond? You raise money off the bonds.
The bonds itself have interest.
Yeah.
I would love to get my hands on a bond.
You can buy a bond.
I'm not going to buy those bonds from these people.
No, you can buy a bond. Go to your bank and you can buy a bond.
I know, but I ain't going to buy from these people.
Well, you can get, you know what? You can get bonds for like $25. They might be $50 now.
Oh, okay.
You know?
I didn't know they were that low. Well, I'm thinking I got to come out of pocket $2,000-$3,000 and get me a bond.
No, you can get a $500 bond.
Okay.
You know, U.S. saving bonds.
Yeah.
You can buy them and hold them for 10 years and make a couple hundred dollars.
I also like I would like you to do some research to figure out who invented the savings, the trust funds.
Oh, okay. We'll get to that another time.
On another topic. But
He assumed the obligation.
Yes. Which
to
nobody
pay the
does.
Debt, which established the government's good credit.
Right.
Alexander Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to what it says. He assumed the obligation to pay the debt, which established the government's good credit. Hamilton, the U.S. has had a fluctuating public debt since the Constitution went into effect March 4th, 1789. And they are still grappling with debt today, when in fact they've had debt from the inception of their freedom, their independence.
Right.
They've been dealing with this debt crisis. So today, you know, Elon Musk wants to try to cut off $2 trillion And I hope they're talking about maybe in a 10-year period, because you ain't going to get $2 trillion savings in
a, not when you got $1 trillion
in interest. In a four-year span. It's not going to happen.
Not, especially when you got $1 trillion interest.
Yeah, how you going to do it?
But you going to raise our taxes again?
Well,
you're going to have way more homeless people out here.
Cutting taxes.
He better cut all the damn taxes then. Go ahead. Matter of fact, let's go ahead and eliminate taxes and just have everything go up in prices by a dollar. Because you got us taking it out of our taxes anyway, so we'll take that dollar. And we'll be more than willing to pay that $4 in gas. Would you be willing to pay $4 in gas if you knew that instead of you touching $800 a week, you're actually touching $1,000 because they're not taking no taxes? I would be more than willing to pay that $4 a gallon.
Well, it goes
tax-free forever. Like,
you,
I would do
you
that.
You pay $4 a gallon, you're paying maybe 75 cents on the gallon in transportation taxes. That usually go to the state, then the federal government get some, so everybody get paid off the selling of the gas.
Well, then we'll just let Elon assume the pay.
Listen. So here's what the position that Elon is trying to take.
Okay.
He's trying to take the position Robert Morris.
Okay.
Robert Morris was known as the financier of the American Revolution.
Okay.
That's what Elon's position is trying to. Now, Morris was the United States Superintendent of Finance. And that was we're talking 1771,
but that was a
1784.
But that was a job description. I need Elon to fall into a job description, not create one.
Well, they created this one back in 1700s.
Right. So it should be.
I don't have a problem with the creation of this position.
Okay.
But let's put some rules and guidelines for this position.
Yeah, but who's writing them? Because we're not going
to
sit up there.
Congress, I have to.
I get that, but guess who's in Congress, man? Everybody that Trump put in there.
Well, yeah. Well, you got the whole government this go round.
Yeah.
So they can write laws, but see, we can also oppose them. See, that's what just happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you got, Democrats still got 49% power.
Yeah, no.
You know, it's not ruling. But guess what? When they go along with, you know, 20 or 30 Republicans that are against something that the Republican parties have done, that's a lot of power still.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's an overturning right now.
Yeah, yeah, it is. You know, so 1781 to 84, that's what Robert Morrison did. He used his own personal credit to fund the American Revolution for 3 years.
That's not bad, though.
No, man. And we see how America started to build its strength. It wasn't off the people, because it would have taken them years to reach the 13 colonies to get anything done.
Right.
You know, because let's say if they were to write a paper in Philadelphia, if they were to write a policy or rule in Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
and it has to go out to the other 12
by
horseback, if they had horses. If they had horses then. I think a lot of times they was going down the river and walking.
Right.
You know, so imagine how long it would have taken for them to reach the 13 colonies. So then there's another name, Haman Solomon.
Okay.
Polish-born American.
Nice.
Merchant.
Nobody's American-born.
Who was a primary financier for the Continental Congress during the American Revolution. So we already see the foreigners building America.
Okay.
You know, in the 1700s, we're seeing it. Here's another name. Abigail Adams.
Now tell me that's a girl.
Abigail is a girl, and okay. She was the first recorded female investor in America.
Really?
Yeah.
Man. Shout out to Abigail.
Yeah, and you'll be more surprised when you find out exactly who she was.
Who was she? I'm curious. No.
Adams, don't that ring a bell?
Oh, she was John Adams'
wife.
That was his wife?
She was the first lady, and then she at one point was the second lady. Oh, no, don't tell me that. Okay, so we're gonna look at these clause two, supremacy.
All right, let's go.
Wow.
Yeah, we went in on that.
I ain't gonna listen to it nothing next time.
I'm sorry.
Just gonna dig it, man. We're gonna dig it.
That's all good. What was the second clause?
The second clause is what they call the supremacy clause, actually.
Mm.
This is known as the supremacy clause in the United States Constitution. It basically states, and we spoke about it, all the federal laws that are comprised and make up the United States Constitution are governing laws.
Mm-hmm.
The supreme laws that must be followed by all citizens, and we said that in the opening.
Right, yeah.
You know, all citizens have to follow these laws. In the event a state law, then if a state issue a law that's, I guess you would call it, conflicting with the federal law.
Okay.
Then the federal law take precedent. That's a
law. So federal law is just over everything. Like, yeah, no matter what your state law is, right. Federal law is that.
And it's ironic, though, because here we are in two different places. And they did have a situation with the bank, the federal, the U.S. bank.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. bank issued a law and the states tried to overtake the bank. And they just simply stated that the U.S. constitutional law trumps state laws. And it's applicable today with your recreational marijuana. If you want to look at, you know, the supremacy and see exactly how it worked. Now,
absolutely.
So you see that, you know, we have a few states that has legalized marijuana as recreational.
Mm-hmm. Got your Colorados, your Californians.
Yeah, but guess what? That's only in those states.
Right.
Now, if you get it, you get caught in federal jurisdiction, you still be prosecuted
in those
with
states?
Your minuscule amount.
In them states?
In no. Well, if you, and I tried to follow this through. Why would the federal government go into one of these states that legalizes marijuana for recreational purposes? And my understanding is quantity. That's when quantity comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
Because you only authorize to possess a small quantity.
Less than an ounce?
Yeah, something of 3 ounces or 3 grams.
It's like 14 grams or something like that.
You know, so if you're caught with more.
But if you have more than that, then
it's a federal, I think that's where you get into your federal charges, and then it's not.
Then all of a sudden it's not a state problem no more.
Right. It becomes a federal
issue.
And guess what?
You imagine getting pulled over for a red light. They open your trunk. You got 2 kilos of marijuana just sitting in there, and then they're like, yeah, and you're telling them, oh, it's legal. And they're like, yeah, well, tell that to the federals.
Yeah.
We need backup.
Guess where you going?
Right. Straight down. I don't care if you're in Colorado, Texas, or California, or Vegas.
So
you caught with them kilos, you're done.
So in the event a state law dictates what federal law states, the state law will be trumped by the federal law, regardless of which one came first.
Mm.
It also dictates that the state courts, regardless of beliefs or laws in that state, must abide by the federal law if there is a conflict among them.
Okay.
There are several federal and state issues that contradicts one another. And we just mentioned one.
Yeah.
And have been throughout history regardless. So one was the marijuana today.
Right.
Back in their days, it was the state bank and regulatory laws where the federal government had their banks and they tried to implement state laws to regulate it. And they just simply say, hey, look, this supremacy clause basically states that the states cannot abide by their own state laws. They must follow the federal regulation.
Mm. Okay.
So that's essentially what Article 6 talks about. It's just the supremacists that, hey, look, our law at the federal level supersedes. Even if your state made the law first.
Ours superseded.
Yeah, the federal supersedes theirs every time. So that's, in a nutshell, what...
So the Supreme Court clause spoke on the oath?
Not Supreme Court, supremacy. No,
supremacy clause. You're right. I'm sorry about that. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. It spoke on the oath, religious tests, and... I literally just lost the third one. Hold on. So it's debts, oaths, and religious tests.
Yeah.
In those orders. Okay. Not too bad.
So even with the treaties that were signed, you know, in each of these states, whatever the federal the federal law is, they have to abide by, even if they signed a treaty before the federal government came up with the law. And that's why, and one reason why we got away from the, and this is the Confederacy Papers.
Gotcha.
You know, that's why we got away from that thing, man. But that thing is vague.
Very vague.
You know, yeah, man, and
Give me one passage out of that.
I'm on.
Before we close it out.
This is because they set up, the Federalists are set up in numbers of articles. So there's like 75 of them or something like that.
Damn.
You know. But this is 13, number 13.
Okay.
And this one was written by Hamilton.
Okay. Mr. Vague Man, tighten up.
Alexander Hamilton.
Hmm.
As connected with the subject of revenue,
okay,
we may, with propriety, consider that of economy. The money saved from one object may be usefully applied to another, and there will be so much the less to be drawn from the pockets of the people.
That is crazy.
If the states, now listen to this, if the states are united under one government,
okay,
there will be but one national civil list of support. If they are divided into several confederacies, they will be as many different national civil lists to be provided for, and each of them, as to the principal departments, coexistive than that which should be necessary for the government of the whole.
Mm.
You know, what the heck is he talking about? You know?
The only thing that I got out of that is you're going to use the government's money in order to use less than of the people's money.
Money saved from one object may be usefully applied to another. Money saved from a usefully object.
So if I build a monument and I got like $1 million left over.
No, wait.
Is that not what that meant?
Wait. One object saved from one object.
Wait. It says one object saved from one object?
Applied to another. Yeah, so I don't know, man. I think he's just using that as an example. So if you went to the store, went to the car lot and you bought a car,
mm-hmm,
and you saved $2,000 on that car,
mm-hmm,
you can take that $2,000,
mm-hmm,
and use it on something else, which is common sense. But
mm-hmm,
it's a one, I'd say, okay, there will be so much the less to be drawn from the pockets of the people. Mm. Okay, so yeah, you don't have to pay out as much for the car. Okay.
Okay.
But you see how
we can modernize it and say for the stadium, just because we are actually paying for that.
Yeah, but you see what I'm talking about with this Confederacy papers.
Yeah, it's very vague.
As connected to the subject of revenue, you know, we may with propriety consider that of economy. The money saved from one object may be usefully applied to another, and there will be so much less to be drawn from the pockets of the people. <You know>? Okay.
Right. So way to throw us for a loop.
I'm gonna give you this last statement.
Let's hear it.
If the states are united under one government.
Okay.
There will be but one national civil list to support.
So one list.
If they are divided into several confederacies,
mm-hmm.
there will be as many different national civil lists to be provided for in each of them. As to the principal department, coextensive with that which would be necessary for government of the hold. The entire separation of the states into 13 unconnected sovereignties is a subject of too extravagant, too replete with danger to have many advocacies.
Just like the guy saying, we don't want y'all dirty money.
When you read this, you'll understand why they went from this to the Constitution.
Yeah.
You know, because
kinda,
this thing
kinda,
here.
It's kind of okay, backwards.
This, yeah, well, this thing, man, it, you know, the Confederacy papers, I mean, it's quite extensive, man. And I'm trying to. It's just kind of like reading, I don't know if you ever read something like philosophy books.
I've read when I was in college.
Yeah. This thing is something similar to reading that kind of stuff, man, because it really doesn't have an end. It just keeps going on and on and on and on and on and on.
Well, I mean, you said that instead of him having lines and sentences, they all had articles, and it was like 75 articles or something like that.
Yeah, man, this thing is deep. Yeah, it really is. Look, you know?
At the end of the day, there's a reason why we had to create the Constitution over that there book. But,
It's 85 to be exact.
85 articles?
Yeah.
Sheesh.
And it's deep. It's just really profound. So listen, folk. We have federal laws and we have state laws, and then you have your local laws. Sometimes they may seem to be monotonous, but they're necessary.
Absolutely.
You know, laws to me are like one person said about locks on doors.
Mm.
You know, they're not, locks not made for thieves. Locks are put in place for honest people.
Mm.
Laws are not made for honest people. They're made for criminals.
Mm.
So if you're going to break the law, be ready to pay the consequences.
I like that.
And if you're going to lock your doors, then that keeps the criminals
at bay.
At bay. Don't keep them out.
Right, I was just going to say, don't keep them out.
Don't keep them out.
You get people like Eddie Murphy handing people bobby pins.
So, but at any rate, yeah. So we have these laws for the purpose of guiding our society. When it comes to the Constitution especially, they're supposed to be guiding our society, because if you stop and think, we're talking 1700. We're just a young nation. We're on the rise. We're building the country then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as we built the country, you know, things become a little more complex and a few more laws had to take place. But then we get to our most modern times today,
mm-hmm.
and we find that people are still not adhering to those very preliminary principles. These were issued, you know, in the 1700s, and we still can't get it right.
It's the level of ignorance in America.
We're watching the judges, we're watching the politicians, we're watching all these people that are in charge break these laws.
Absolutely.
But nevertheless, the citizens such as you and I have to abide by them.
Right.
What is that about? We're not rattling the cages loud enough. They're not hearing us. You know, so we need to rattle the cage. We need to let them know, hey, listen, these laws were not just made for the citizens.
They're made for y'all too.
They're made for everyone that hears the voice of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you can't abide by them, you need to do like the guy in Canada. You need to resign your post. Absolutely. Justin Trudeau.
Absolutely.
You know, just step away from it, you know, and go on and be a lawbreaker. We want to deal with the law. We want to live by the law.
So. And every time y'all break one, you guys up there, y'all crack down on the laws for us, like we're the ones that broke it. Make that make sense to me, ladies and gentlemen. OG, appreciate you sitting with me, boss.
Pleasure all mine.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's a fun fact for you. I bet you all didn't know. Alexander Hamilton, born in 17... What was that? What year was he born? It don't even tell me what year he was born, but it tells me that he died in July 12th, 1804. And I guarantee you don't know the cause of his death.
He had a cold.
I'll let you guess.
Yeah, ran over by a horse.
I would say close, but no.
Okay.
Alexander Hamilton. Shout out to Alexander Hamilton. Shout out to, what was her name?
Abigail.
Abigail Adams, John Adams. Shout out to Elon Musk. Shout out to every name that we've mentioned. We're not here to diminish y'all's name or to get hit with all of those defamation lawsuits. We crack jokes here, but we keep it real. Alexander Hamilton died of a duel. You know when they say, I meet you Shanghai noon and we shoot it out for a duel? That's how Alexander Hamilton died, in a duel. If you're not willing to die for your country like Alexander Hamilton is, then step down and let somebody else who's willing. OG, what you gonna leave him with, man? What you leaving him with?
They got it, man. You know, you can't top that.
All right, I'm gonna leave him with this. If you could do this for me, I'm gonna leave you guys with this, ladies and gentlemen. Listen, in life, we contribute to the way that the world goes round. That's positive and negative. You can't be mad about the standpoint of America when we're feeding into the negative instead of trying to catapult the country into a positive direction. You guys and girls out there, y'all go and y'all buy cars, y'all going to these leases, or you're going to contracts and y'all decide not to pay them. That hurts the country, which in turn hurts us. When y'all go out there, y'all go buy a house or whatever the case, and y'all allow the house or the cars to get repoed, that doesn't just hurt you. That hurts our interest rates and how much money that we're able to get. So in 2025, please make smart decisions on what you would do. Because no matter what your state says, Article 6 says federal takes precedence. Y'all stay blessed out there. And above all else, don't forget to share that love and share this wisdom. Y'all be blessed out there. Love.